You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Your alternative talk radio contact. The Planet. KGRARadio.com.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Welcome to another edition of Into the Fray. If you haven't seen the announcements online, the heavily expanded and updated second edition of Somewhere in the Skies, A Human Approach to the UFO Phenomenon has been released. And it has already hit number one in three different categories on Amazon. Its expansion includes follow-ups with most of the interviewees, brand new chapters and encounters, chats with scientists and researchers, and even an entire chapter with Kevin Day, radar operator and the first person to witness, track, and intercept the Tic Tac UFO. You can get your copy on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Wanted to say a big thank you to those who helped get Beyond the Fray Bigfoot to 100 reviews on Amazon. Cody, Leslie, Troy, Jamie, John Olson of the Stranger Bridgerland series, Ash, Rojo, and Eric. Thank you guys so much. Doesn't mean that we don't need more reviews for Beyond the Fray Bigfoot, but now let's see what we can get for Beyond the Fray Paramalgamation. So please head on over to Amazon and leave your rating and review if you enjoy the books. A big hello and welcome to my new patrons over at patreon.com. Michelle, Lori, Troy, aka Tony, Ron, Graham, Sticky Sound Zine, which, by the way, has an awesome Etsy shop, so make sure to check that out. Look in the show notes for it. I'll put the link there. Jack, Samantha, Reed, Chad, Crystal, Tyler, and Richard. Welcome to Patreon, guys. Also, on top of what you guys see at patreon.com as far as the rewards, I also recently added a private Discord channel for us. That is for patrons only. And we've been having quite a bit of fun with it. We've been chatting there every day, and I'm learning as I go because I am new to Discord, but it's an awful lot of fun. So head to Patreon and search Into the Fray to check out the various pledge levels and their rewards. And now to my talk with author B.A. Crisp.
Well, my name is B.A. Crisp, and later in life I was prompted, or I felt compelled actually, to write a book loosely based on some of the events that I experienced in Northern Ohio when I was raised as a foster child. The book is entitled Red Bird, and there were a few things that happened, and I need to give your listeners a little bit of background. So in Ohio, I was born in Sandusky, Ohio, which is up by Lake Erie, and I was remanded as a ward of the court. I grew up as for a good part of my childhood as a foster child. So I was in foster care, ward of the court, and eventually I went to live on a pretty remote farm outside of Perkins Township, and a lot of weird going-ons happened from the time I was 9 years old all the way up until I left the area at the age of 16. Some of those things were highly unexplainable, and they were also things that I didn't revisit until many decades later. But this area, I discovered, was actually, there was a certain part of it where in 1941, the U.S. government's land agents took possession of 44 million acres of land, which is like roughly the size of the New England states. Mm. And in my home county, which is Erie County, the government exercised eminent domain and forced 150 Ohio farm families, some of which had had those lands since the Firelanders first came to the area. They took 9,000 or 10,000 acres of land. Mm-hmm. Now, why? Yeah. Yeah. So, and people tried to fight it to no avail, and it became the Plumbrook Ordnance Works and later NASA Plumbrook Station. So I remember going, we had an amusement park out there. A lot of people may know the amusement park of Cedar Point, which is right on the lake. And when you drove along Route 250 on your way, if you were headed towards Cedar Point, I believe north, you'd look to your left and you could see a black or a red and white checkered dome, but that's about all, and maybe a stack. I think there was a smokestack, and that's all you could really see because it was just surrounded by cornfields and woods. And I was always curious about the place. Fast forward a little bit, you know, I'm growing up, I'm managing my childhood. My grandfather, I found out, was later a subcontractor, an electrical subcontractor on the building or on part of NASA Plumbrook Farm. I'm not exactly sure what he did. He died a long time ago, but I did find that out. So as a ward of the court, I'm eventually taken to this farm, and it was called Mapledale Farm at the time. And it's pretty remote. The book Red Bird is very loosely based on the story, but I was seeking answers to a lot of questions. My father was awarded custody, and he later turned out to be not my father at all. I had an entirely new family that I only recently discovered through Ancestry.com, and they actually found me. So we're up to 8 siblings total so far. Wow. And my father used to, my father, who would have been 100 years old, he was a lot older than my mother, and we all had different mothers, so we're all half siblings. He spent 4 years in France during the army in World War II working in intelligence, which I thought was pretty cool. But we go back to the farm. I'm about the sighting that we saw. I was about 12 years old. And we were on do you remember the old jungle gyms that were, you know, you'd put up and they had monkey bars and swings, and they were like mini playgrounds back in the, I'm dating myself, but back in the early 80s, it was like 79 or 80, I think, the summer of 79 or 80. And I know we were on summer break. So we're sitting outside in the evening. It's my brother and 2 other friends, and I still remember who they are, but I won't out them. And we're sitting under the jungle gym, and I was a pretty bossy kid. So we're trying to do two finger pickup in a seance, if you will. And one girl is on the grass, and we've got our two fingers under her, and our plan is to levitate her. So my job was to look around and make sure that my brother and my other friend were fully focused on this.
You know, what's so funny is that I have played that game. We called it, I like the two finger pickup. That's exactly what it would be. But we called it light as a feather, stiff as a board. I recall very vividly trying to play that game as well.
Yeah. So we weren't having much luck lifting Monica. I'll say her name. I won't give her last name. Lifting Monica off the ground. And out of my eye, so I'm facing toward this country road, and it goes up an incline, a small incline, and on the if you're looking at the road, to the right side of the road is a field. There's our yard, and we had a strawberry patch. We had a tree in the corner that met the. It was right where the boundary line to the field and the road and our yard where it all met, and there was cornfield and then woods. So it was sort of this rolling, and then it went up this incline. So as I'm looking, I could see the top of the road. Which was the Reed house and where that was located. And I see someone bipedaling up over the hill. And I thought, oh, somebody's walking. Not unusual back then. And I'm a kid, so I'm watching, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, somebody's walking. Well, as this thing gets closer and closer, we also had a security light next to the tree, a big yard security light. And this thing gets closer, and it reaches the border of where the yard and the field and the road is located. And I realized it wasn't human. It was so tall, and it was white, which shocked me. And I thought, what is this thing? I don't even know what this thing is. My 12-year-old brain could make no sense of it. But you try to fill in gaps. You try to figure out, you're trying to make sense of it. And I'm thinking that, I remember my gut instinct was like, that's not human. And that's way too tall to be a human. And is that a polar? That's not a polar bear. So all these thoughts are going through my head. And I suddenly scream, oh my God. And I remember I said, oh my God, what's that? And the other friend sat up, Monica sat up, the other friend and my brother, we all looked at the road, and this thing turned, it like twisted its torso, and it galloped on all fours. It was no longer bipedaling. It galloped on all fours and shot into that field. And of course, we raced to the house. We had no, and I saw the fur, you know, I saw this glimpse of like fur. And I thought, there's no human being that runs like that. So we still to this day don't know what they saw, what we saw. I always try to find a more earthly explanation for that, whether it's a government related type of, you know, epigenetic program. I don't know. Is it something, some zoological species that we haven't been able to find? Who knows? But I do remember, you know, we tried to fight for the screen door to get in. We were so scared. I told the man that I thought was my dad, and he's like, oh, you kids are crazy, and really sort of scoffed it off and laughed at us and whatnot. But I remember a couple of days later, we had, you know, the trucks with the military in the back of they were all sitting in the back. All the soldiers were in the back of this big Jeep thing where they were, I don't know what they call it, but I remember going by, and I remember locking eyes with one of the soldiers, and I'm thinking, why are they out here? What are they doing out here? And I wonder now in retrospect, were they looking for that thing? I don't know. but it's a weird facility, because there have been, if you Google Ohio and Lake Erie, there have been unexplainable lights. There have been other quote Bigfoot sightings. And then I think that I had a bit of vindication when I mentioned this episode years later. There was another gentleman from my hometown, and he said, "Oh my gosh." And they lived probably 2 miles away from where I was at the time. And he said, before my mom died, she told my dad that she saw a white creature and she thought it was trying to get into the house. And she and my little brother were there, and he was a baby at the time. And she was so scared, and they all dismissed it. And years later, after she died from breast cancer, they had a fireplace that was built out of railroad ties, the mantle, and wedged between that mantle was a letter she had written about that night and how she thought that this white creature might harm her. And she was writing the letter that if anything happens to me, and she must have later stuck that letter there. And then we had another incident where my foster mother just started screaming. I was upstairs. It was at night. She was readying for bed, and she started screaming. And the sheriff was called. He came out. They found nothing. And she was pretty shaken. And my dad ran outside with a gun and couldn't see anything. And later she had told me, and this is a pretty reserved and sensible woman, you know, she later told me, she confided later, she said, "All I know is it had really red eyes, and I don't think it was human."
I mean, you've already hit on a lot of the questions that I was going to ask you, so high five on that one. Especially the other sightings in the area was a big one, because of the fact that it's a white haired creature, it tends to stand out a little bit more, of course. So, go ahead.
And what I will say is, in the winter, we had, you know, it was, you know, we had the blizzard of 78 up there. And I remember as a kid, I learned how to ride a John Deere snowmobile. In fact, I rode one that was way too big for me, but that's what we did. We'd go into town on the snowmobile in the winter to get, because it's lake effect snow. So in the winter, sometimes when you were in that rural environment, it was the only way to get around. So I'd be sent to the store to get bread, or sent across the field to the dairy farm to pick up a gallon of milk or two and bring it back on the snowmobile. And that was how we lived. So I often thought, well, what a great thing for a white creature to be able to hide in the winter, maybe not so well in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah, that I can tell you, I don't miss that lake effect snow. So that's stuff that they could never predict, and it always dumps really hard when it tends to decide to do so. So your brother, something that was kind of mentioned in the email, was to this day he still will not discuss this incident.
He won't. So I have to preface all this by saying that my mother was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic. She was diagnosed very early, and my grandmother always doubted the diagnosis. So my mother was a pretty wild and rebellious young lady back in the late 50s, early 60s. And when she was 16 years old, she decided to go joyriding in a car in which she did not have permission to drive, and she had no license. So she was pulled over by a police officer, and she waited, she was watching him. The story goes that she was watching him approach in the side view mirror. And as soon as he got up to the car door, she took off, and a police chase ensued. And before it was done, she had taken down a bunch of fence line and was unconscious. Mm. So she spent a few days in a coma. And my grandmother thinks that she really had a frontal lobe injury, that an undiagnosed frontal head injury that was never appropriately treated. But after that, she says, and I wasn't born at this time, that she seemed to do okay. And then later she had an episode where she started to see things or hear things. So my brother was like, you can't tell the story because everyone will think we're crazy. And I'm disassociating myself from that. So I gave that a lot of thought, and I said, you know, he's right. And we let it go for decades. So as I aged, I was like, you know what? graduated at the top of my class at George Washington University's Graduate School of Political Management as their co-valedictorian. I've attended Oxford at Exeter College. I went to the London School of Journalism. I've passed my psychological evaluations to which I was subjected as a ward of the court. And in fact, that led to my emancipation as a minor from the court system. But, you know, I thought I think it's time to tell this story. I'm still searching for answers. And I know that there are people that still reside in my hometown who want nothing to do with this, or it's kind of leave it alone. I know that the nuclear reactor testing facility was abruptly decommissioned in the early 1970s, and they practically jumped the fences, and they left every pen, every coffee cup, every pair of glasses. It's like, it was like walking into a time warp. And just recently, there is a defense contracting firm known as Sierra Lobo who has poured millions into the facility, which, by the way, is still allegedly run by the Army. So, and I think that's about, without looking up, I have a bunch of notes, but I'm curious about it. They say they worked on propulsion systems, and I have a feeling there was much more going on than that.
I love those secretive places like that. What's the thought behind them leaving in the manner that they did? Like you said, they left the pens, the chairs, the everything behind.
Well, I think that they had an accident, and I don't think that the public was privy to that accident. I think there was some sort of nuclear, I wouldn't call it fallout, but I think that they, that there was some contamination with the water. I think that they had a leak. I think it was all covered up. And I know for a fact that I lost at least two former classmates or people that were close to me in age. One I babysat for, he was actually a lot younger. You know, Nick died as a senior of a weird cancer, a lot of leukemias. And I know that Brad died too, very young as cancer. And I lost there was another, she wasn't a classmate. She was 2 years older than I was, and she died too. So, you know, my graduating class at this school would have been about 67 or 68. I ended up graduating at a different school further south, because I left the area at 16. But I always thought that was really curious.
So almost like a Flint, Michigan type of a situation going on there.
Almost. I mean, I don't know for sure. I did actually meet with Aaron Brockovich, and we actually did discuss some of the concerns that I had. But it seems as if, from what I understand, they're back there, so they must have done one hell of a cleanup effort. And that was my understanding, that they also poured a lot of money into cleaning up whatever it was that happened back there.
Mm. Yeah, that's terrifying. Especially
still off.
Yeah, and you're moving up to a, you know, what's supposed to be a nice, peaceful area, and then you have stuff like that going on. And come to find out, you're just dying every day because of what they're doing, what they're testing or playing with.
Yeah, and then I got caught. I remember, so I was dared as a teenager, and we'd been drinking. I know that surprises you, but
I am shocked.
But we had this little campfire, and I said, you know, because I was out in the woods all the time. I loved to read, and I loved to be out in the woods, and I would just traipse all through there. And I had a pet squirrel, and I had a pet raccoon, and, you know, I would just constantly try to save all these animals. But I remember I found a hole in their fence, like somebody had cut it, like somebody had gone through there. I don't know why, I don't know what for. So of course I was like, but I was very curious. So we were doing the truth or dare, which I'm sure you've also played. And someone dared me to go through the fence. So I did. And it took, oh my gosh, I bet it was less than 5 minutes before there were soldiers with guns, and I was hauled off, and they have an FBI office back there, or they did. They have my name.
So, you're like, to this day, I cannot misbehave.
Yeah, right. So I was, So I remember this guy was yelling at me about, you know, I'm trespassing and I'm in a lot of trouble. And I said, well, you shouldn't be yelling at me because I found the hole in your damn fence. But I was pretty rebellious and mouthy back then. I guess I still am.
That's what, you know, a little bit of underage drinking never hurt anybody. You just happened to traipse in the wrong area. That's all. No big deal.
Yeah, that's right.
No biggie. So swinging back to the sighting of this white creature, how far would you say you were from it? And I know, you know, you were only 12. It was a long time ago. But if you could guess.
Maybe 200 feet. It was pretty close. The other thing, too, is we used to, now you could chalk this up to rats, though, because I always try to find a circumspect explanation for things. But we had a silo, and that is where we would dump our garbage until we loaded it up to take it either to the landfill. But a lot of times with we had two silos beside each other. So one, we actually were trying to recycle way back then before it was a big thing. And we would put the food without really, we just use it as compost. So we had this compost pile in this rotting or in this rusted out old corn silo. And then we had another silo and we'd store the garbage in there. But it was pretty amazing to me because you'd find all these weird sticks and you'd hear these clicking noises. And it always smelled bad back over there, obviously, because you have rotting food. But sometimes that door would be open, like something had gotten in, which was kind of weird. And there was another smell there too that it would smell like, well, it smelled like garbage, but it was worse. It was like sulfur or rotten eggs. Mm-hmm. And there'd be times out in the woods where you'd get a whiff of that. And I remember kind of traipsing along with my brother and I'd be like, what is that? You know, and he would always say, well, it's probably an underground well, or maybe it's the creek or, you know, something like that. But I always wondered about that too.
Yeah, that sounds pretty familiar. So when it got on to all fours, you said it was incredibly fast when it went to all fours. And I mean, what was that motion like? Did it look unnatural, or, you know, was it just as comfortable on all fours as it was bipedally?
It was just as comfortable, and that was weird. So the arms were very long, and when it was coming down the road, it was really swinging those arms. And when it twisted its torso and took off, it's almost like it leapt, its front legs hit, and then but when it galloped, it was like the front and the back legs would come together. I don't know if that makes sense, but they came together. It was almost like a horse running.
Right.
And it just, it was like a gallop. And I remember thinking, I've never seen an animal run like this, not a bear. And maybe the bears do run like that, but you know, we've thought of everything. Was it an albino bear? But we really didn't have bears there at the time. Certainly wasn't a coyote, and it was bipedaling all the way down the street, almost like a human would walk.
And it was so white that you actually thought, oh, what is that, a polar bear? Like, that's how white this thing was.
That's how white it was. My mind was just trying to focus, and my eyes were trying to focus. My mind was trying to make sense of what I was seeing. And my brain, you know, it was just trying to make sense of what it was seeing. And when you have no reference point, it just becomes, it's deeply frightening. But now it makes me so curious. It makes me so curious that, you know, what was out there? Yeah.
Did it ever look over at you guys?
Well, it did. It stopped, you know, it kind of, as soon as I said, oh my God, what's that? It stopped as if we surprised it. Like, it wasn't expecting us to be out there at night in the yard like we were. It's almost like we startled it. Like my yelling startled it. Yeah.
I mean, and then, so you run to the house, you guys are obviously scared, which rightfully so. Did that change your habits of the outdoors after that, or how you felt about it?
You know, it didn't, because as a kid, you're pretty resilient, and the outdoors was, you know, it's where I spent a lot of time. It really didn't. I mean, I'd have moments where I thought about it, but then it was like, you know how you dismiss things later and you go, yeah, maybe I didn't see what I saw, because we got a lot of flack from the adults who were saying, yeah, you didn't see what you saw, and no, it had to be something else. And then you kind of grow relaxed, and I didn't see it again. You know, we would hear stuff, but we didn't see it again. So I didn't change my habits. Maybe for the first few weeks, I don't remember though.
I can really identify with all that stuff, including, yeah, you are resilient. You go back out, you're a kid. It's what you want to do is be outside and play. But also something that came up in the email was that your husband thought maybe it was in fact a soldier from, you know, one of the bases nearby. They had, obviously, you already mentioned, they had a lot of stuff going on there. And I really identified with that, because that's exactly what my father told me when I told him about the shadow figures that I had seen in the woods when actually I was 12 as well. So I really could identify with that part of your sighting on both counts. But to you, there's no way that that was a person, right?
Well, when, you know, it took me a long time to tell my husband. And I didn't want him to have second thoughts about the woman he married.
Right.
So when I did finally confide it to him, you know, he said, oh, and he's, you know, this, you're talking about a man who is extraordinarily logical. He worked in law enforcement for many years, and he said, you know, it has to be a guy. It had to be a guy in a ghillie suit. So I was, and then he showed me, you know, pictures of that. And I said, yeah, maybe. And then I said, yeah, you're probably right. But I never bought that in my heart. Like, I never believed it. I kind of went along for a while. And then finally I just looked at him one day and I said, that wasn't a guy in a ghillie suit. I remember what I saw. And it wasn't that. It was not that. There is no human being that could turn like that and gallop that fast across the field into the woods. Just wasn't going to happen in a ghillie suit. And if he's in a ghillie suit, he's probably handling a weapon too. And I didn't happen to see that at all. So,
yeah, how would he manage that motion? Yeah. And as big as you say it was, it just seems a little odd, yeah, to say the least, for that to be a person. So as far as, I know that, yeah, your brother, which I understand his thinking after what your mom had, you know, been diagnosed with, but has he ever said, even just in passing, like, gosh, that was weird what we saw, or gosh, I think that was a Bigfoot, you know, all those years ago. Has he ever verbally said anything about the sighting, even just to you?
He says he doesn't want to talk about it. And if it brings it up, he's going to deny it. And he's like, I still have to live here.
Right.
And he's, you know, he's got a family and he's pretty conservative, and he's done a wonderful, you know, he's still married to his high school sweetheart, and he prides himself on, and he's a hardworking, successful guy, in construction, and he's just kind of blanked on that. And I think too, he's had to come to terms with, he didn't really have a good or close relationship with our mother. And I think he tried to distance himself and also distance his kids from that illness. And whether that's, you know, based on his own fears or concerns, I don't know, but I do know that he's pretty content and pretty happy. And I just think he doesn't want he or his wife or his children to be faced with the ridicule, especially in a small town. And that's what would happen. And we read all the time about stories when people come forth, they're immediately discredited.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the media is a Goliath, and if there is something going on from a military or technological perspective, that entire complex, you're not going to beat it. You're just not going to beat it. Not as a plebeian is what I always tell my husband.
Yeah, it is definitely a Goliath that is nearly impossible to fight if it really gets after you. So I'm looking at the cover of Redbird. And by the way, everybody, this is book one of the Quanta Chronicles. And the cover is really cool. So is there, and this may be way off base, I've not read it, at least not yet. Is there some significance as to why the cardinal on the front is not whole per se? It almost looks like, you know, the wings and the tail are not quite there.
Well, that, I think it's really great that you called out the cover. Thank you. So my son Sterling made the cover. The red bird represents a messenger. And there's also, I wanted the factor of blood. So one of the things that I did a lot of research on was Rh negative blood. I'm Rh negative. I'm O negative, Rh negative. And I did a lot of research on Rh negative blood, and I found some fascinating things, whether hype or not. Mm-hmm. I tried to research both sides of it, and I actually found a scientific study where two scientists were able to strip down the blood to like an AB or an A or B. Every other blood has like a protein on it or a spike, and you strip that down, you have basic blood. So Rh negative is either something otherworldly, is what everything you read out there says, or it's so basic that this type of blood is actually a precursor seeder basic blood for all of Earth, all, you know, sentient beings on Earth. So it was kind of cool. And I just wanted that in the cover because there's a part of the protagonist's name is Samantha, and she has a special blood. And she is taken to a remote farm, and she can't remember certain things, but then she starts having memories, and her family's gone missing, you know, and her mom is institutionalized. So this is where you get a little bit of this loosely based on the truth with this book, which is first in the series. So that's a little bit of the story behind the cover.
Very cool cover. I wasn't trying to be distracted while you were chatting, but I just pulled Amazon up and I wanted to comment on that. Very cool. So you're working on book two then?
Yeah, book two is actually almost done. It Samantha continues her journey as an adult this time. In the first book, she's 16, and you know, she goes through a lot on this farm. And then the second book, she winds up working for the government sector, and she's a young adult, and it takes off from there. I don't want to give too much of it away, but she ends up having to join forces with a private chemical and weapons contractor in order to find someone very special to her. And she's constantly looking for her father, too, who went missing in Vietnam.
Wow. So you definitely threaded a lot of your real life into the chronicles here.
There are some real life elements, yes, but it is a fiction book. It's kind of a cross between science fiction and that interstitial fiction is what someone recently told me who read it. A lot of metaphysical and science fiction related and paranoid, or not paranoid phenomena, paranormal phenomena. And it was a great process.
Sometimes it's paranoid. I mean, sometimes that can be paranoid. That wasn't a misspeak at all, you know? Especially when you're alone at night and you just hear strange noises in your house, then it becomes paranoid. B.A., do you, this is totally up to you how much, you know, you want to share or if there's anything to share, but one of my patrons had a question for you, and you kind of hinted at some of this when we first started, but Andrew of Black Triangle Coffee was wondering, was there any supernatural events or high strangeness prior to or after your sighting of this Bigfoot-like creature?
Okay, so both. So a couple of weird things. We were out in my brother and I were out in the yard another summer night, and we were just kind of on our stomachs with our you know, heads in our palms. And across the street was a conifer. It was a field. It was and this is on the other side of the road. And I guess it would be looking east. And, this conifer was all by itself. And that plays out in Red Bird as well. So this conifer never lost its leaves. And we didn't really go over there too much because it was a farm field and it was muddy. And if I did cut across, it was usually in the winter time when it was all covered in snow and I was on a snowmobile. And this was right before, this was like before, I think this was before the incident. It was, and we were looking at this tree, and all of a sudden these three beams of light just went ping, ping, ping into this tree. And we both and didn't say a word to each other. And again, it was like hauled ass for the screen door to the kitchen, or went into the mudroom. And we were just like, what was that? And we had no explanation for that. But it was just these three, so six beams total, but they just pinged into the side of this tree, and it freaked us out. And we went over there. I remember we went over there, and there were two under the weeds and stuff like that. He's like, look, and there were two huge concrete slabs, and there was like a little hole there. And we had to go back to the house and get a light, get a flashlight, and we found stairs that were going down into the ground. And I was like, yes, yes. So I was like, oh, so my foster mom's like, oh, that's just an old house. That's just an old house. There used to be a house over there years ago. Well, I could find no record of that, but it could be true. And I'm like, well, why would there be stairs going in the ground? She's like, that's the old cellar. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, why would they put such great big slabs? And she's like, so kids like you didn't get caught down there.
Man, I guess. I don't know. So, that's creepy.
Yeah, so I went back. I actually went back just about 3 years ago, two or 3 years ago. And I wanted some questions answered. And this was after my niece Camille called me, and she said, I think that my mother is your sister. And it turned out to be true. So I flew up there for my sister's 75th birthday at the time. A lot of my siblings, with the exception of one, is they're much older than I am. So I go up there, and I thought, you know what, screw it. I'm here. I'm going to Plumbrook. And I tried to get in the back way that I remembered, and that's all closed off now. They still have the restricted area signs, and it's almost like in a residential neighborhood now. So you got to like drive through all these houses, but then it's in the back. Well, that was the old entrance, and it's not the old entrance anymore, but they got cameras everywhere. So I'm like, wow, I wonder where the entrance is. So I found it. You had to go right between the cornfields off of that Route 250. And you talk about some security. It was like, and my girlfriend, she was so funny. She was sitting in the car, Laura, she's from Ohio, and I made her go on this adventure. And she's like, if something happens, I don't have any part of this. And she was totally panicking, wouldn't get out of the car. So I get out of the car. I park the car. I get out. I'm looking around. I can't get in. I mean, this thing is just like Fort Knox. And finally, this guy comes out, and he is just in full riot gear. And he's like, can I help you? And I said, yeah, I was just interested about this place. And do you do tours? He's just looking at me like I'm crazy. And I explained to him, I said, well, my grandfather helped build the original here, and it would be really nice. I'm working on a book, and it would be really great if I could. And he actually gave me the name of an engineer who was running the place, and he said, call this guy and, you know, come back on your birthday, and I was there in July, and my birthday was December. And I remember thinking it, because that was like his availability was, he could give me a tour, a private tour in December. And I didn't go back, but I still have his number. And I really want to follow up and do that. And I'm curious to see just if they meant it, or if they would, you know, if they, or if I just right. did some little chintzy tour.
I mean, it's interesting that instead of just hollering at you to get away, that you shouldn't be there, he actually gave you the guy's number. That was pretty cool. Unless, like you said, it was some kind of a tactic just to get you away.
Yeah, right. And he did. And he actually turned out very nice. And my girlfriend wouldn't get out of the car, and she was just like, she was almost going into a fetal position. But it turned out fine. And you can, you know, I haven't checked it lately, but you can read about Sierra Lobo and some of the things that they've been doing. And it is public knowledge that Plumbrook Farm, or, you know, NASA Plumbrook Farm, or station, as they called it, NASA Plumbrook Station, is still, I believe, in the hands of the Army. I think it did go over to the Air Force. it's been part of the Pentagon. It's kind of jumped around a little bit, but the public sector in terms of our military is still very much involved with it. So
that conifer tree, was it, you said it was a lone standing tree in that little area right there?
Yeah, it was. So there was a big field across. So we were kind of surrounded, not kind of, we were surrounded by farm fields. But then we had woods behind us. So behind our homes, the farmstead was just woods. And across the street from, so the front of the house faced the road, and across that street was just a big farm field. So our house actually sat on four corners. But across the street was just a big field with that one lone tree, which when I did go back, it wasn't there anymore. So I pulled in the driveway, nobody was around, and I thought, damn, because I wanted to see. So that was when I went to see my sister. I drove out there, and nobody was there. And all of a sudden, this truck pulls in, and I'm getting ready to leave. And again, I'm with Laura, and this truck pulls in, and out pops this guy, and he's gorgeous. He's got white hair, blue eyes, and his kids, oh my God, they were like, and his wife too. Every one of them, whitest hair, bluest eyes, and gorgeous, and really nice people. And they ended up, he was so gracious, and he let me go into the barn, and I went up to the old rooster or the old hen coop. I looked over by the tree, and there were a bunch of bricks there. It was almost like an oven or something. And I said, "What is that?" And he said, "Oh, we found that when we moved in here and we started making some changes." And he said, "We kind of dug that up." He goes, "That wasn't there when you were here." And I said, "No, I don't remember that at all," which was kind of weird. So, but I did ask the wife, I said, "Anything weird go on here?" And she said, "Sometimes." And that's as far as I got her to go. And that's as far as I could get her to go. And I wasn't going to push her because they had a baby. They had just had a baby, and she was exhausted. She'd been up all night, and she just happened to come home while I was in the middle of this tour with her husband and their kids, and who were great. They would go, "We have to show you something." And they'd take my hand and they'd lead me all over the farmstead. But she had been up all night because she had just had a baby a few weeks prior who was still in ICU. So she was exhausted, and I didn't press her to talk.
Yeah.
But I did have an incident. So I went up to my old bedroom, which was upstairs, and I stood there for a minute, and I just remembered you had asked me if something strange had happened. And after I had seen, and this was probably right before I left. So I was I was probably almost 16, and this was after the white creature, but I was in bed one night, and I remember I woke up because I felt like somebody was in the room. And I looked over at the doorway, and there was this figure, and it was a figure of a being. It was like a blue light being. It was like a glowing blue light. Wasn't scared a bit. In fact, I felt an overwhelming sense of love and peace. And I remember I looked over, and it was enough to make me say, because I used to call my foster mom, Mom. And I said, "Mom." And then I thought maybe it's my brother. And I said, "Ken," and no response. So but I'm not scared at all. And finally, I just got out of bed, went over to the door, waved my hand through the door frame. And I'm like, "Oh," and I looked over. So my brother's room was across the hall. His door was open. And I thought, "Oh, BA, you're so silly. That's just the light coming in from the street lamp." And, and I went back to bed. Well, it was when I rolled over and looked back at the doorway, I shivered. And that's when I couldn't sleep, because I was like, "That's not what I saw. That's not what I saw." And I never forgot that either. And we did have a lot of weird poltergeist type of activity. So we would have things that would disappear and reappear, things that were moved, noises we would hear. I remember one night I was awakened, and it sounded like somebody was turning pages in a magazine or a book very loudly. And I yelled for them to stop. and they stopped, and then it would start again.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It strange things like that. Another, so we had a big barn, and I remember one time I was walking out to the street and, or out to the barn, and all these leaves started blowing around my feet. It was the fall. I remember it was chilly, and these leaves were blowing around my feet. And all of a sudden I heard these hushed whispers, like this, like a language. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is that? And I heard the voices and I heard people talking, and I kept looking around and I saw nothing. And then, you know, that disappeared. Another night, it was in the evening, we were talking with a neighbor. We were all outside. My foster mom's out there, my brother, the neighbor down the, when I say neighbor, you're talking a little ways down the road, but, you know, he was coming over and talking, and then he looked over and he said, oh, you got, and this barn is huge. And he said, some, you guys left your barn light on. And I remember Eileen and I looked at each other. She was my foster mom. And we looked at each other and we said, we didn't even know we had that light. We didn't even know that light. So it took us about 20 minutes to locate that light switch in the barn, which we didn't even know we had. And it lit up the whole barn like a Christmas.
Yeah. And if you didn't know it was there, it wouldn't have been you guys that turned it on and left it on. Right. So
somebody was out there lurking around, who knows, but a lot of weird things. And then I know another instance where I was with a bunch of kids from school, and, you know, it's always popular to go out to the cemetery and smoke weed, or at least we did. And, back then, and I remember same thing, wind starts blowing, we hear the voices, and it's like we scattered. We're like, get in our cars, we leave the cemetery. Another night I was with the superintendent's son and a couple of other kids in a car, and we came up over a hill, and somebody was in a whole hooded outfit, and it was like the Grim Reaper, not quite like that, and they just stood in the street, and we're like, whoa, and he hit the brakes and we were gone. So a lot of weird, a lot of high weirdness going on out there.
BA, do you think then that, you know, a place like that, or a place like, because it sounds much like something like a Skinwalker Ranch or something, you know, where there's just weird places that a lot of weird shit goes on. And I mean, do you think that that's just happenstance that the government moved in and bought land or had, you know, these facilities there? That's just happenstance because, you know, there's a lot of open land out there and it's prime for building a massive facility and doing testing? Or do you think that it is connected somehow?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. So I did a lot of research on the history of the area. So in Peru Township, there's a well, and that used to be a gathering place for Native Americans. They also used to gather at the river, which they used to call it, I can't pronounce it now, I'll have to get the name for you, but they also used to gather there, and they do some sort of meditation like ritual where it wasn't a place where they settled, where the Iroquois settled. It was a place, or the Wyandots and the Iroquois, they didn't settle there, but they came there. They came together to do rituals. The other thing I found as I was doing a deep dive Google search was that the area outside of Peru Township, which is right where that land was eminent domain, I found stories from the 1800s when the Firelanders were coming in. They dug up bones, but not in Native American bones, but they were sitting up. Mm. The bodies were sitting up and they were very tall. In fact, one was so tall that a guy claimed, and if you look up, they have this all over Ohio where they allegedly found giants. And one man claimed he could use the skeleton as a helmet. It was that big. So I think that I don't know what the reasons were for. I know that that NASA Plumbrook Station originally started as a munitions kind of place where they kept gunpowder and they were making artillery and things like that for the war effort. But then it kind of morphed into something else entirely. And when I started juxtaposing the history of that entire area, which by anyone's standards on the outside looking in, it seems nondescript. It seems kind of boring. It's hardworking, salt of the earth type of people that, you know, God-fearing people who, you know, they're just, we're not real confrontational people being from the Midwest, and but we work hard. And when I looked at the history, I was absolutely astounded. So I had another friend from high school tell me, yeah, if you go down this one road, which has now been paved, and it was a dirt road when we were kids, and there was a mound there, and there were trees on the mound. And one time this kid's arm went through, and he pulls up shell necklaces. So I'm sure at one time the fields around there probably had some mounds that were covered over. There were also coins, weird coins. Somebody found a weird coin, and I talked to an archaeologist about a weird coin that was found there that almost looked like it wasn't something that we minted. It looked like something from the Roman Empire. So it's, there's something very weird going on there. And I don't know what that is. I don't have any idea. All I know is I tried to distance myself from it for many years, went on with my life. And it's only been within the last few years where I've resurrected my interest, because I felt brave enough to do it. And, you know, you get in your 50s and you're menopausal and you just don't give a shit what people think.
Amen to that. No, Bea, you're awesome, because you actually did do the research, you know, because a lot of times that is, you know, the question is, well, did you do any research on the house or the land that the house sits on and all of this? And something that it reminded me of is what you were talking about with the Iroquois and the Iridots is, and I cannot remember what episode. I will put it in the show notes for everybody. And BA, if you want, I can send you the link. But I talked to author Patrick Meekin and his book entitled Nightmare in Holmes County, of course, Holmes County, Ohio. And his house had, talking shadow people, you know, lights, phantom figures, poltergeist activity as far as things moving around, you know, stuff going on outside the house, including... and it is Amish country as well, but he would find really dark stuff in the woods. So, you know, we're talking like basically sacrifice animals and things drawn in blood and all of this other crazy shit going on in the woods. And it was the same thing. You know, he was trying to do the history lesson for himself and figure it out. And it was the same exact thing. You have, of course, Native Americans. They were here first doing their thing. And then the Amish that were out there. And of course he has his own opinions on what some of the Amish folks are into, which he blatantly basically says is a type of witchcraft. So it is so interesting, as far as it has nothing to do with you really, except for you happen to be in that spot, either living there or working there or whatever the case might be. And you're just kind of in the middle of all this whole swirl of things going on. So that's that. Just sorry for the tangent, but that's what it reminded me of, is that chat that I had with Patrick about nearly the exact same things.
Yeah, and I think believe me, I don't mind the tangent. And what I would love is for someone to come forth with and say, oh, well, that was us, and we were doing this, that, and the other thing. Yeah. Fine. That's fine. But, you know, don't just scoff and ridicule, you know, people. There are a lot of people, good, normal, as I broadly define that, credible people who have these stories, but because they fear that ridicule and that, again, that Goliath media. And that was one of the reasons, Shannon, that I was so attracted to the way you present your stories or the people that you interview, as I watched On the Trail of UFOs, which I thought was interesting. I loved the respect that you gave to the subjects who interviewed with you. And I was just telling my husband in passing, and, you know, and he reached out, he had the wherewithal to reach out to you. And I'm very glad for that.
I am too. And thank you for being willing to come on and actually talk about this stuff, because as you said, there are so many other stories and people out there that they probably don't even really know it. But the second they start talking about it, and I know I had this experience, once I finally started to get it out, boy, it felt good to do that. And I just think it's really important to try to cultivate as much information as we can.
It does. And any good scientist, you know, or any, you know, the science and the sacred, as we're discovering through the study of quantum physics, and even things like Tibetan Buddhism or meditation or raising your consciousness, however you wanted to find that, you know, the science and the sacred are coming together. And what we think of as magic, you know, or magical or even supernatural may not be. And, you know, I've done a really in-depth dive on, because the Samantha moves forward in Redbook, I've done a real deep dive into bilocating, translocating, and what you might know as remote viewing. And that gets, you've heard of that term before, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I've done a deep dive into remote viewing, and I look at that and I think this isn't a special skill set. This isn't something that a lot of people don't know about it. A lot of people don't do it, but it is possible, I feel, for any reasonably functioning human being to accomplish.
Right.
It may seem supernatural or malarkey to some, or hocus pocus, but when you look at the steps to take in order to remote view, this is something that has met with a lot of success, to the tune of, I think, $22 million is what the CIA put into it for a number of years. You know, they had a budget for that, and they did have some success stories. The Russians did it too. And there has to be some efficacy to that, or else they wouldn't have stayed at it for so long.
No, and that's such a great point with the remote viewing. And as you said, a lot would just on the surface go, well, that's a bunch of like psychic malarkey BS. But to be honest with you, it is not. And like you said, any normal capacity, gray mattered human being can teach themselves to do this. Now, there are some that are better at it than others. Right. Or it might take them five more years to get to where someone might do it in one. But that is something that a lot of people would call paranormal, or, oh, that's some really, truly weird shit, and I'm not barking up that tree. But when you really read about it, like you said, CIA poured millions of dollars into this program because it was, in fact, legit. So obviously you did a lot of research for Redbird, which obviously also stems from things that you had, you know, this fire lit from going through this stuff when you were younger. Now, I know that we're all going to let you go soon, I promise, but if we could just touch on this one thing before we go, is you brought up the fact that you are Rh negative. Now, you've already said that you are aware of what goes on with some of the claims, and some are on the low spectrum of kind of what some would call weird, and then there's the really high spectrum of high strangeness attached to Rh negative blood. I mean, Nick Redfern even wrote an entire book on that stuff. I don't know if you knew that, but
now I know. Take a look at that.
Yeah, you might find that kind of interesting, and I should get him on to talk about that. But I've had a few people on that they have a whole bunch of strangeness going on. It might be spread out over their whole lives, and come to find out, they're Rh negative. Is it tied in? Who knows? But it's at least something to look into. I mean, from what you looked at for Rh negative, though, do you feel it has any tie-in to the things that you've experienced, or that's just a happenstance?
I think I'm in the middle of answering that question. I don't know yet. So one of the things I tell my husband is, I need you to, if I go down the rabbit hole, you need to keep hold of my ankles, okay? Because in order to yeah. really research this stuff in depth, you have to have somebody there that can pull you back out of the rabbit hole. And this is what happened to a military guy who was with the CIA program for the remote viewing program. And he wound up in a psychiatric hospital, and he tells his story, but he wound up in a psychiatric hospital, and he was completely discredited and burned from the CIA. His career was over, and he was actually had been in the military and was on his way. He was really kind of touted as, well, this guy's going to be a general. And he had a talk with a Native American who was also working with him on this project. And he asked the guy, he said, how did you come out of this okay? And he said, I don't have your Western viewpoint. I'm Native American. He said, I'm open and I realize the connection that we have to our universe. And they actually took him, the Native Americans took him up into Wisconsin, and they did a, they almost did a shaman ritual type of to heal him. And they, he also added, this Native American also added, when you go down the rabbit hole, you have to remember to come out again. And that's what I always keep in mind, is I'm here for a reason. I'm a sentient being, a human being for a reason. You know, there's nothing, there's nothing special about us, and there's everything special about us. So when I say that, what I mean is, and I just told my husband this the other day and he laughed, and it's like, I still have bodily functions. I can still bleed. I'm still going to die. I was born into this world. And as much as I may want to think I'm special, I'm not. We have the skill set. And that's in with the Rh negative blood. Do I think there's something there? Possibly. I do. And I've talked to other people, and I've started asking that question when I interview them, what's your blood type? And inevitably, the wilder stories I hear always have, I'm Rh negative. And I don't know if you've seen the latest on the COVID-19 studies, where they have said, you know, people with O negative blood are have about an 18% less susceptibility. We're not immune from COVID. I am not saying that. But the studies that I've read have shown that we're about 18% less likely to contract. We have a resistance to it. We have a higher resistance. And then I started looking for Rh negative, but I didn't see that. And when you look at only 5% of the global population has an Rh negative blood type, it's very rare. And if you're O negative and Rh negative, you are a universal blood donor, but people, you cannot take other people's blood unless it's an O negative Rh negative person, which I find really weird.
That's very strange.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was the other thing. This was another weird thing that happened. So when I was pregnant with my first child, I went in and, you know, and the doctor tested me, and he's shaking his head. And he said, in my 30-year career as an obstetrician, I have never seen a woman come in here with Rh negative blood. And I had to go on a government registry. I did. He had to report it. I had to fill out some paper, and I was only like 18 years old. And I had to fill out some paper, and then he had to give me a shot of Rogam, because if you're Rh negative female who's pregnant, your antibodies can actually cross that placental barrier and attack your unborn child.
What?
I
didn't know about that. Never heard that.
Yes. So it's called Rogam, and they do it so that you can give birth to your child without blindness, deafness, or potentially a miscarriage and death.
My God. I've heard a lot of different things with Rh negative. Never heard about that. So you had to fill out paperwork.
I did. Yeah, at 18, I had to fill out and I had to carry a card at the time. And I wish I still had it, but, you know, I wasn't always real responsible when I was 18. I since long lost that card. But, yeah, they used to make you carry a little card around. And it would say, I am Rh negative, and it had your name on it, and it had the little red, you know, cross on it, and it was pretty wild.
Bea, you're obviously an alien hybrid, so I feel very fortunate to be talking to you. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so swinging back then real quick just to the remote viewing, because it crossed my mind, because I said how some people, when they start to remote view, they just pick it up really quickly, and they're really good at it. And for everybody out there, a good movie to watch has been the great Ben Kingsley in it, and it's called Suspect Zero. It's a dark movie. It's got a lot of dark stuff in it, but it's a great example of what a great remote viewer is capable of, and maybe how hard it would be to be good at such a thing. I wonder if people that are Rh negative would make for better remote viewers than most other people. I wonder if that ties in at all.
That's a great question. I don't know.
You got to get on that and see.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
You're like, I have enough to do. I'm writing books and things. All right. So last question, PA, and then I'll let you go. Thank you so much for your time today. Do you have any activity now? Any weird stuff going on in the last few years?
The two of us talked about that. So the helicopter's hovering over the house, which I videotaped for you.
Yep.
Which is kind of, I'm like, here they are again. And then it's funny because I went back to 2015 and I found another one. And I was like, what the hell?
Oh.
Just, resources, just come talk to me.
I'm right here. Little... Yeah, you don't have to creep around. I'll talk to you.
Yeah, and I'm like, I can't think of any crimes I might have committed.
So, nothing you can remember right now anyway, right? I mean,
I lead a pretty conventional life.
That's so, the whole thing though. You filled out that paperwork way back when you were 18 and now you're on the short list, man. They're like, you can move wherever you want, BA. We're going to find you.
Yeah, right.
Well, you are a joy to talk to. And I mean, part of that is because you're so just well researched on all these things that you're obviously very interested in and for personal reasons. So again, thank you so much for coming on and just, you know, let everybody know where to find you and your work.
Sure. So you can visit, I have short stories and you can visit our website, which is www.bachris.com. And there is a link to Redbook there through Amazon. We're also available at I don't know how far your show goes, Shannon, if it goes all over the world, but we're in Barnes & Noble, we're in Amazon, we're in Dynamox in Australia, we're in Blackwell's in the UK. So it's been a pretty exciting run so far, and the book has been well received so far, and I'm happy about that. I didn't write it to become rich or famous. I wrote it to be cathartic and to potentially answer some questions for myself and try to come to terms with some of the things that I experienced as a foster kid.
It really does help, doesn't it? Just to get it out there. Whether it's in the verbal form or the written form, there is something extremely therapeutic about it.
And it's been it's just been a wonderful ride, and I'm not done yet. So the second book will be going to the editor at the end of the month. There will probably be, the Quanta Chronicles will probably be a 3-book series. And then I've already started another novel, about an Oxford-based archaeologist who loses, a child up in Peru in the caves. Yeah. And that was the other thing I forgot to mention to you too. So that there were the cave systems in Ohio, and a lot of people don't know those exist. And I found another story about how these people back in the 1800s were taken down into this cave and they saw all these chalices and gems and skeletons and weird stuff. And then that was very close to Plumbrook as well.
BA, have you ever read The Descent? I don't know if you've ever heard me yak on about that book, but it's basically my favorite book by Jeff Long. But that's all about the subterranean beneath our feet and what might be inhabiting it. So really terrifying. I have never wanted to go in caves less after reading that book.
Yeah, I actually think I did. And it was did you mention that in your latest documentary? Did you talk about that or not? I may have taken it from another documentary, I just started it with the underground stuff because I wanted to learn about, you know, the alleged underground cave systems and things like that. And I was just learning about crypto terrestrials last night. So
Yeah, the idea of that stuff. I'm not a fan of, small, dark places, so I wouldn't be a caver anyway. After reading books like that, and it's a big old, like, nope, no, it's on no list. But I'm fascinated by the idea of that. And, yeah, crypto-terrestrials and things like that. You're just going, well, could be. You never know. Stranger things have happened, especially with all the things that I cover on my show and the people I get to talk to. I'm like, nothing's crazy. I wouldn't call anybody crazy for claiming that they've seen what they've seen, especially when it changes their life, and heaven forbid it changes it in a really bad way. And we have people that don't go in the woods anymore, because of what they've seen. But,
I always wonder too, if people that hear voices or see things, maybe they're a little more tuned in or dialed in than we are.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, with your blue light being, I mean, you know, what do you even classify that under? Is it under more the ghost haunting type stuff? Or is that under just, I mean, what box can you put that in?
Is it an astral body? Is it a ghost? Is it another being? Is it a cloaking device? Is it some sort of high tech military cloak device where they're testing it on unsuspecting teenage girls?
Right. Could be a hologram. Could have been you. Could have been you standing there. Because you're, I mean, let's face it. The conjecture of the Rh negative, and oh, you have powers, BA, that you didn't even know that you had, and you were projecting yourself into that doorway. So there's just so many different cave systems we can go down when it comes to something like that. But it is interesting that you felt at peace with that. It didn't freak you out at all, which in all rights, it probably should have, but it didn't.
Not that one. That was actually pretty peaceful. But I do have to ask you, Shannon, you had mentioned earlier in the show that you saw shadow figures. Where was that?
So that was in Utah, in Duck Creek, Utah, where to this day, a lot of people from Vegas, because it's only like a 5-hour drive, they go up there to cool down and everything. And I was 12, same age as you when you saw the white Bigfoot. And I was on my four-wheeler. My dad was down in town. So I was being a naughty kid and didn't have my helmet on. And you've ridden snowmobiles and stuff, so you know that if you've got those damn goggles on, you can't see a goddamn thing instead of what's in front of you. So that's why it's important to know that I didn't have those on. But it was middle of the day, and I was hanging back because my brother and stepbrother were riding in front of me. And the cabins up there are set up pretty much on a straight grid system, all dirt roads. So you could kind of haul ass if you were, you know, a stupid kid and you wanted to do so, and we were. And so I'm hanging back, and I looked off into the woods there. It's not dense woods. It's not like Ohio where you have all that thorny, thick ground brush and all that crap that's out there. It was real clear ground and then just aspen trees. But there, again, it's not dense. So I look over, and there was four pitch black shadow figures running in the woods, paralleling me, keeping up with me, by the way. And the weirdest thing was, is they're like pumping their arms and legs, but they weren't, I always say it's hard to describe, because they weren't running, it's not like I saw them running through the trees or anything. It's just they didn't have to dodge them or, you know, move over anything over the ground. They just were making the motion that they were making. Mm-hmm. And I watched them for like a 5 count. And then, of course, I'm still riding my four-wheeler, have to check the path in front of me. I do so. I look back, and they're just gone. But the 5 seconds... like just changed everything for me, you know? And that's why I brought up the thing that my dad said and what your husband said. I go back and I'm like, hey dad, just saw some really weird stuff in the woods. Really weird. And he's like, oh, he's ex-military. And he's like, oh, those are just military guys. They were just doing exercises, you know? And I'm like going, dad, no, it's not they weren't people. It was like the blackest black. And still darker than that, you know, like no light could find them. And this is like middle of the day, no clouds. It's summertime. We're out there at my dad's cabin hanging out. And no light could touch these things. Nothing. And I would say I'm lucky that, I think I'm lucky. I think I would have processed it very differently. But none of them like interacted with me. No waves, or if they had faces, if they turned, I don't know. But you know, I didn't get the hint that they even knew that I was there. It's like I just caught a glitch in the matrix or something for those 5 seconds, you know. Or maybe I wasn't supposed to see what I saw, but I did. And yeah, it just takes a few seconds and your whole life is like, oh, well, the world has other things in it that maybe I didn't even, it would never have crossed my mind that even existed, you know.
Mm-hmm. Or we're aligned with other worlds, according to quantum physics, which, you know, has been proven out in some theories. But and that's where I go back to, I don't think it's magic necessarily, or even, you know, we call it supernatural because we don't know what it is, but maybe there's a logical explanation for it. You know, just things that we are just not advanced enough to yet know.
As far as the remote viewing, to tie that back in, because if you can teach yourself, and anybody can, just look it up, guys, if you don't believe us, you can teach yourself to remote view. You may not be super great at it, or you might be friggin' awesome at it. But what if you can unlock that part of your brain to do that, to see a location that while you're sitting in your living room, you can see a location thousands of miles away. What else could we really do? Or what else is just shut off right now? You know?
Yeah. And I'll say, so I was testing that And I remember one time I was trying to remote view, and I wound up, it was like the early 70s, and I'm going down these stairs toward this woman, and she's got like this short hair. It was a bad haircut. And she was sitting by a river, and her name, and I remember I just walked up to her, and she had a yellow pad, and I said, "Hey, Ruth." And she was so shocked. And then I just kept walking, and I have no idea where I was, but I remember there was a river, and I think there was a bridge in the distance. And Ruth, I for some reason, I felt like she was a government worker, and it was just a weird kind of thing. So if anybody knows anything about that, to chime in.
Wow. You knew her name.
I did know her name. It was weird. I just knew her as Ruth, and I just walked down the stairs. I was coming toward her, and she stopped writing, and she's looking at me like, "What the fuck?" And I go, "Hi, Ruth." And then, I said, "Yes, I remote viewed the remote viewer," and I kept walking.
Peace out, Ruth. There you go.
Yeah.
That's strange. I love stuff like that. I love, love, love stuff like that. It's just so freaking weird. Like, how do you even begin to explain that?
Yeah, you can't. You can't. And who knows? And that's why I'm like, I have no idea where it was. All I know is there was a river, and she was sitting on some low wall and there was a river behind her. And I think I remember a bridge to the left, and I had to come downstairs to approach her, and then I could go around her and continue on. But it was just really kind of a weird, it's just one thing I remember. And then there's, well, no, it's not just one thing. There's lots of things, but that's another episode.
We really should have another one, especially if you start to, you know, because obviously you're writing about things that not only are you interested in, but that you want to research, like you said, like this whole cave thing. So seeing as how I am terrified and fascinated by caves, I would love to have you back on, you know, as far as things that you find out, or obviously if you have more stories, I would love to hear them. I know that everyone else will too. But a million thanks for doing this today, BA.
Yeah, well, I had a wild thing happen. So I worked for a client. I've never met him in person. And he said, "Have you ever gone to Sedona?" And I said, "No, I've never been there." And he said, "Well, I have a property management company, and we'd like to loan you a house for your help during COVID with some of the research you did for us." And so I'm excited about that. So I don't know how close that is to you, but I'm assuming if you're in Vegas, that's probably pretty far away.
Sedona's one of, well, you know, we went there for On the Trail of, and I had never been there. Place is insane, amazing. Yeah, if I can make it out there somehow, I will.
Right. I told my husband, I said, that is the freakiest thing. He like called out of the blue and said, you know, "We'd like to offer you this."
Well, BA, thank you so much. And if any, especially today, after we've spoken about this, if you see any of those black birds flying above you, let me know, please.
I will. All right. You take care, Shannon. And thank you so much for the opportunity and talking with you. I feel like we could sit around a campfire and drink and talk all night long.
We definitely could. I would grab the whiskey and whatever you like to drink, and we'd have at it. Yes.
Lady right there.
Cheers to that. All right, BA. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Shannon.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little fire. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. We'll be right back. example, are quite divided on this. They will say, no, we don't believe literally in reincarnation. That after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you're being reincarnated. If you are liberated, you understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it in this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.